afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining me. This is Hashtag No Limits, and I am your host, Shelley Kino. Hashtag No Limits is about people who society places limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will become. And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is no better example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. The caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells and then reforms into the butterfly. As if that's not difficult enough, then it has to struggle in order for its wings to be strong enough for it to fly once it gets out of the cocoon. While none of that can be easy, neither is busting through the limits that society places upon a person. And today, I'm so excited to share with you my friend Carla. She has a great story. She's a hilarious person, and I'm sure that will come out at some point during our interview today. See, already we're laughing, so that's just how we are when we're together. Carla, thanks for joining me. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great, especially now that all the, you know, excitement and jitters have gone away. I'm just so excited to be with you.
Oh, I know. I have that effect on people.
You do. It's awesome. So what brings you? What is it about you that we've decided, yes, you qualify for hashtag no limits? And by the way, she yelled at me because I hadn't had her on already. So I'm just saying, this is I was in trouble.
I bullied my way on the podcast. That's my limit is bully. I am a bully. I think my biggest limitation probably is ADHD. Because I went to school in the 70s and in early 80s, I know I just dated myself, even though I look 29. And ADHD, I didn't know what that was. I mean, I had never heard of that. I just knew that in my report card, you know, that was the old days where you had the two-sided report card and one side was all like grades. Well, I did fine on that side. And then the other side said, can't sit still, doesn't raise hand, talks out, talks constantly, won't stay in seat. So, you know, I always said I was diagnosed with the sit down and be quiet disorder because I didn't have, I mean, I'm sure ADHD was around then, but, you know, so that was kind of my limit, I think, is I didn't learn how everybody else learned and I had to kind of develop my own tools to avoid being distracted because I get distracted easy.
So what kind of tools did you develop for yourself?
You know, it's funny because they've changed over time. I think one of the things, well, and here's something interesting and you're going to find this fascinating probably is my grade school and my high school at the time were both open schools. So there were no walls, there were no classrooms. And so from first grade to eighth grade, it was just all one big open building and there was just coat racks in between.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So you could hear your classroom, the next classroom, they were watching a movie in the middle in the learning center. And my high school was the same way. Central at the time, half of it, like the science half, it was closed indoors, but the other half was all open. They've since closed it now, but so that made it even more challenging because not only was I distracted by the things directly around me, but why did I want to pay attention to what was on the board if they're watching like the Little Rascals movie and the original Little Rascals too, not the remake, the original, that's how old, in the learning center. So that added even more interesting, I don't know, elements to it. So a lot of tools I had to develop. One thing I really use a lot is doodling. If I'm supposed to be paying attention to something, like if, especially if I'm in a meeting, I doodle what we're talking about or I'm the note taker because then I have to stay focused and I have to, and as writing it, it kind of helps me remember it. As otherwise in a meeting, I am like, What is that? The fan who, traffic. And then I'm like, what were we talking about? Can I say my name? So I've usually volunteer to be the note taker because that helps and doodling.
That's an actual excellent strategy. And there are programs out there now that teach kids who have trouble focusing. There's one called, I think it's called Sketch Notes, but there are other ones out there that do the same thing. And they teach them like how to take notes, but they're doodling their notes. So it's not just writing out every single word. It's like maybe draw a picture of what the notes are going to be about, what the content is covering. And then you have maybe little symbols. And, you know, somebody like myself might look at that, not having the training, and be like, this is all just a bunch of doodling and this doesn't make any sense to me. But the way these programs work, they've taught the teacher and the student how to use this program, and so that the student can do what they need to do, get what they need, and also be able to focus on what it is that they're supposed to be trying to learn at that time. So you should have come up with that, and then you wouldn't have to do what you're doing now. You'd be a bajillionaire probably.
I should have copyrighted that back in the day. Well, and the other thing I do too is when I take notes, in the margin I write any questions that I have, because that stops the, you know, I still do that sometimes, but it stops the just shouting out in the middle of the meeting, and because I'm afraid I'll forget my question. And so writing it in the side. When I got to high school, one of the things that I discovered was multicolored flashcards.
Oh,
like neon yellow, neon pink. Those help because, you know, I did okay in like math. I did great in math because it was step-by-step instructions and you did this and you were done. But history, English, anything that I had to like memorize and pay attention, I struggled. I mean, I struggled big time in history. So colored flashcards helped. Highlighting, even more so as an adult, I've discovered like every color highlighter in the world. My last job, I was in charge of 6 kids. And so each kid had a color. You know, this kid was blue, this kid was, and everything that bind, their binder was blue, their highlighter was blue, their files were blue. So I'm big into, I love highlighters, multicolored ink, multicolored markers, multicolored bright post-it notes. You can't get enough bright post-it notes.
And I knew these things about you. And I thought, wow, what a great way to organize and, you know, to be able to keep everything straight. I didn't know until a few weeks ago that you, if you had gone to the doctors, you probably would have gotten a diagnosis of ADHD, and that these were strategies that you were using. And so I want anyone who's listening to understand that ADHD doesn't go away. Carla has, you know, while not having an official diagnosis, she probably does have some level of ADHD. I'm not a diagnostician, so I'm not saying she does. But the things that she's talking about, I want people to understand that she has found ways to accommodate what she needs. And like I said, until a few weeks ago when she told me, you know, I could be on hashtag no limits because I have ADHD. I didn't know because it's not evident. It's not like it's a big problem for you because you have found all of these strategies. And I'm so thankful that you're sharing all these different things, because a lot of what you're saying that you have put, and I'm going to take this off the bottom because I don't want it to distract you. I don't know if you even saw it.
I did. I'm trying very hard to look you in the eye so that I don't pay attention to it.
Right. And so for anybody who's watching, just leave hashtag live or hashtag replay, and then I'll know that's what that thing was scrolling across the bottom. But I think a lot of the things that you're talking about, sometimes we offer those to students with IEPs because of their ADHD or some other reason that they're having trouble focusing their attention. But we don't really know if they work. And because they've worked beautifully for you, really doesn't mean they're going to work for everybody. Mm-hmm. And so these are just some ideas of the things that, as we said at the beginning, what worked for you, Carla, and this is what she's sharing. So if you have someone who has ADHD, whether they're a grown-up or a student in school right now, try to find what fits. Were there things that you tried that didn't fit? Like what?
Yeah. I tried recording and then playing stuff back, like lectures, especially in college. I tried recording those and playing those back Well, guess what? I couldn't pay attention when I played it back either. So, you know, because I thought it was just, I thought, oh, it's just too much. You know, it's just, I can't absorb it all at once. I can't take notes fast enough. And so I tried recording. Miserable failure, because the recording would be going and I would do the same thing as if I was in person. I would drift off, then come back and be like, oh man. And then I had to rewind and go. And then it got so frustrating for me that it was more of a hindrance to me than it was a help, because I would just get so mad. I'd just give up. I'd be like, never mind. I don't. Right. So yeah, I tried that. Now music does help me, and it's funny because it can't be soft, soothing music. And you would think, like, okay, if you're overstimulated, something soft and soothing, nope. It has to be something with kind of a driving beat. And then like rock music or heavy pop music. A couple of years ago, I was doing some research for one of the kids on my caseload, and I stumbled across a book about ADHD. And one of the things it said was rock music. That beat kind of refocuses you, mm-hmm. and it's like, okay. So it, you know, I just thought it worked for me. Plus, if I put my headphones on, then that's all I can hear. And so I can type and do other things and focus because it's just kind of in the background, but I'm not, I mean, even like now my office, I hear if there's somebody out in the drug test room, or there's somebody out on the phone, or there's somebody, I'm like half like, what did you say my name? What? So if I put the headphones on, even better. That did not work. I'm trying to think what else. Having a partner, like have a study buddy. Nope. Me and my study buddy just talked about other stuff.
I can't imagine either talking about things other than topic. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now I wish I had some of those things that they have now, like fidget spinners, those rubber bands underneath the desk. Oh my gosh, that would have been great. I'm short also, so my feet don't touch the ground. And so this is what school looked like for me. That's what it looked like. Constantly moving, sitting, putting my foot underneath myself, whatever, to try and get comfortable. And even at one point I tried different chairs. The teacher, I also was one of those kids that the teacher was like, okay, you're going to sit at the front of the class. Cause then you'll pay attention. Oh, and that didn't work. And okay, you're going to sit at the back of the class so you can pay attention. And that didn't work. And I mean, I was a good student, but it was just those things. It was, Carla, why can't you sit still? Carla, could you stop fidgeting back there? Could you stop messing with your neighbor's hair or whatever? What are you looking at? So, and highlighting works well for me too.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just thinking, you know, right now you're in an office that you don't share with anybody. Have you always had that situation, or have you had jobs where you've had to share space with other people?
I've always pretty much had that. My last job, I had to share a little bit, but it was hit and miss. You know, we kind of overlapped a little bit, so it wasn't too bad. I have to be by myself. Number one, I would goof off too much. Like I would just be like, you know, hey, what are you doing over there? What song is that? What are you listening to? So I wouldn't get anything done. But what the highlighting thing, what I was going to say too, is I've always highlighted, and I've always used different color highlighters, which say starting in about high school, cause in grade school, I don't know that they made different color highlighter. You got yellow or you got nothing. Okay.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
So starting in high school, and then it worked fairly well. Except for when I was trying to memorize lists of things or spelling words or definitions. And I read an article that talked about don't highlight entire paragraphs or don't highlight the whole word, highlight sections. And it explained that like your focus, that if like, say you're trying to memorize a spelling word that's this long, mm-hmm. highlight the middle, because that brings your focus. As you start to drift off, the highlight brings you back, and then And it does, that does help me. It does help me memorize. Like if I have a list of words I have to memorize, which I don't really have to do that much in my job anymore. And the good thing about it is here's a positive. There are a lot of positives about ADHD. And one is I can wing it really, really well. So like written speeches or trainings or presentations, I could get up there, give me a microphone. I'm good. I will, you know, I have learned that I can't focus and read and do what a lot of people do, especially like in presentations.
Mm-hmm.
Nope. I'm going to get lost. I'm going to lose my place. So I just make bullet points and sometimes I follow them and sometimes I don't. And I go with the flow and I've learned that I'm not above just going, yeah, well, that didn't work. So we'll try something else next time. Or I'm really good at telling one-liner jokes for tension breakers. So I've learned that too, because I've tried very hard to write out a presentation, stick to the format, be very subdued, hands on podium. Doesn't work.
Those are boring speakers anyway.
Nobody honestly
likes those kinds of speakers. And I mean, I do presentations as well. And I get frustrated, like at the conference that you and I were at recently. And because I was like, oh, I gotta stay up by the computer because I gotta switch the slides every so often. And there was one slide that I had a bunch of information on it. And so I walked around and it was because I knew I didn't have to switch the slide really quick. And it was weird because people are like, what is she doing? Like, where's she going? And then I didn't have any more slides that had enough information that I could walk. So I'm like, okay, well now I'm stuck up here again. So I need to get like a pointer thing that I can move my slides.
Yes.
With just that clicker thing. But
I am so bad when they tell me I have to stand in one spot. Oh my goodness. I'm just not good at it, but I think that's a benefit though. I mean, I think it's a benefit of ADHD is I'm comfortable with that. And a lot of people aren't comfortable with public speaking. And if they are comfortable, they're only comfortable when they rehearse. And like, I speak a lot with Judge Sanders and she rehearses and practices in front of the mirror and she has her speech and she's a great presenter, but she's not comfortable with winging it, you know? And so she'll like say to me, we're doing that presentation tomorrow. I'm like, oh yeah. She's like, you got your stuff done? Nope. I'll just wing it.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's a positive. I think that one of the other positives is I'm quite creative.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a think outside the box kind of person. My husband and I just talked about this the other day because my boss, my old boss, who you've met, Randy, was an inside the box. Like, I don't know that he ever strayed outside the box. And I am an outside the box. And so we learned at one point, we went to this training and you did like the colors personality test. Mm-hmm. And we learned how to work together. So we used to joke that we worked really well together because I was outside the box coming up with all the ideas. And then he would kind of reel me into the box and say, okay, now real life, how do we make it happen? Like, let's think this through. Let's be practical. And so two personalities that you think wouldn't work together at all work together really well because kind of filled in his areas where he wasn't good and he filled in my areas where I needed help and we worked together really well. So man, take that color personality test. Anybody out there? It's awesome. Have you ever taken that?
I've done so many of those personality tests to find whether or not I have a personality and it never works.
You have
so
a wonderful
I've just given
personality.
Up.
That's why I don't do IQ tests. I don't want him to find out that it's zero. You're the first person ever. Zero.
I think you'd be fine. I think you'd be fine. You're very intelligent. And that's the wonderful thing about intelligence is I've wholeheartedly subscribed to Howard Gardner and his theory of multiple intelligences. So it's not just that you're book smart. There are other kinds of intelligences according mm-hmm. to him. And I absolutely agree with him because I've seen people who don't necessarily do really well in school, but once they're out of school, whether that's, you know, literal just weekends and evenings, or if it's like they're done with school because they are old enough, they thrive at certain other things. And I had noticed that many times before ever hearing about the multiple intelligences theory. So when I found out about that, I was like, well, yeah, I can see that already in people that I know. So it was easy for me to agree with what he was saying. And plus, I'm not naturally book smart. My brother is naturally book smart. So Howard Gardner's theory makes me smart too. So
I totally agree, because I have one of those brothers as well. Like, yeah. I have one of those brothers who could do like chemistry in the second grade, but doesn't look both ways before he crosses the street. I have one of those brothers. So
my brother is, unfortunately for me, and I'm going to tell him not to watch this episode because I don't want him to hear what I'm saying. But he is not only naturally book smart, but he's also naturally smart with his hands and with people. Like he
one of those.
Has almost all of the intelligences. So he's really disgusting. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Boo, anyway. Don't watch this show. What's your brother's name?
Exactly. What is his name?
Yeah.
Brian.
Brian, we don't like you. Go away.
It's okay, though. See, I can dislike him that way because he always says that I was the perfect child. I'm his younger sibling.
Oh.
And
oh,
so I watched all the mistakes that he made, and then I didn't do them. So I'm the perfect child. He's the intelligent one. So we can elaborate.
I was the middle child, and I was definitely not the perfect child. I mean, I wasn't a bad child, but, you know, it's funny because as an adult, I think back to, like, we were talking about ADHD diagnosis and things, and I can remember doing the weirdest, I mean, not bad stuff, but just weird stuff. Like, and my parents just constantly being like, would you stop? Will you be quiet? And I can remember my dad, like, can you be normal for 5 minutes? And I'm like, I thought I was being normal. So I, like, one time I wanted to join the rifle corps. Like, I was probably in the fourth or fifth grade, and I saw the band people twirling the rifles, and I thought that was the coolest thing ever. So I went out on the front porch and was twirling a broom. And my dad,
well, I thought you were going to say a real rifle. So
no, a broom. And so my dad comes out and he's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm practicing for rifle corps. And he's like, the neighbors are talking. You're out here spinning a broom. I was having a great time out there. I've been known to dance in the yard. I mean, so I kind of felt bad for my parents because, you know, like I said, I wasn't a bad kid, but they didn't know either. Like nobody told them, oh, she's ADHD, you know, this and this. They were just like, what is going on with you? Why can't you be quiet or sit still? And the impulsiveness, they didn't know how to deal with the me just blurting out questions, because it didn't matter what the topic was or what we were talking about. And, you know, we had family dinners every night. And so you never knew. And they just didn't know. I mean, luckily, both my parents were very honest people and very open people. And they'd be like, well, and they just answer the question. And so I learned a lot sometimes that I didn't want to.
maybe at the wrong age, but you figured it out.
But they were great because, you know, I would just blurt out, like, where do elephants come from? Just in the middle of, like, dinner or something. And they'd be like, what? So I feel bad for them. And I think of it now when I'm talking to one of the juveniles I used to supervise or something, I think, my poor parents, like, they didn't know. I mean,
right.
They were just like, oh, you're exhausting. Like, yeah.
And so that's an interesting comment that you made. Like, I thought I was normal. So when you would hear comments like that, did that hurt you, or did you just kind of, were you able to just sort of deflect it?
I think it depended on the person in the context. Like, I knew my dad wasn't being insulting. You know what I mean? My dad was easygoing. And my dad was one of those guys that left the house in, like, red shorts, a yellow shirt, a purple hat, and green socks. And my mom would say to him, can't you just dress like a normal person? And he'd be like, you know. So I think that from my mom or my dad, I didn't really take offense by it. Now, sometimes from teachers or from other peers, that would be like, why do you have to be like, can you just knock it off for 5 minutes? It was a little bit, I don't know if it hurt my feelings as much as I just thought, well, why can't I knock it off? Like, I can't knock it off. You know, right. I can't sit still, or I can't do whatever. Why can't I? So that was more than that, than hurting my feelings, more of like, well, what is wrong with me that, you know, I can't remember to raise my hand. That's such a simple task, but yet I just, and so that was probably more of an issue than actually like hurt feelings.
Yeah. So you learned these strategies. It sounds like most of the strategies you learned when you were upper middle school or high school. Nobody helped you come up with these things, or did somebody help you?
No, nobody helped me. They didn't have, matter of fact, when I was in grade school, they didn't even have special ed services yet. That wasn't developed. And some of the kids that, as I got older, probably third or fourth grade, they were bused to a whole nother school district. So there weren't, I didn't know what an IEP was or special ed.
Right.
So not really. I can remember some people throughout my life, like saying, well, have you tried this? Or why don't you try flashcards? Nobody ever sat down with me and said, why are you distracted? Or what can we do differently? Do you need something? So I just kind of figured out what worked for me. Like I just would do something and go, well, that didn't work. Until I started working with juveniles. And honestly, I think I would do research to help them with an issue. And then I would find strategies that I would be like, oh my gosh, that I would implement myself, like highlighting the middle of the words and things like that. That was just fascinating to me. So.
Yeah. And it resonated with you because you were like, oh, if I would have had this, or if I had known that it made more sense to you.
And I honestly think that's why I went into working with juveniles. I've always worked with juveniles up until last year when I took the job as the boss. So for 30 years, I worked with juveniles. And I always knew I wanted to work with juveniles. And that was part of it, was as a kid myself, and the ADHD was just one part of it. There was some other trauma stuff and things like that. But I just thought to myself, man, my life really could have went either way. Like, somebody could have come in and taught me these strategies and I might have caught on and I might have went further in college or who knows. But the same is true. Somebody could have came in and said, school's not for you. You need to go, whatever. Psht, I'd have been gone. And so I could have very easily went one way or the other. And so I felt like in life, my job or my calling was always to help juveniles because they get a bad rap. They get a bad rap in school. They get a bad rap when they commit an offense. They get a bad rap. It's all the way around usually. And nobody wants to work with them. And I always just felt like, if one person would have just intervened or would have just said, hey, it's not that bad. It'll be all right. So I've always felt like that was my calling.
Well, I think you do a beautiful job with it. And if it wasn't for your outside the box thinking, you probably wouldn't be on here right now because we would not have probably crossed paths, even though we did discover after the very first long conversation that we had that we probably did cross paths earlier in both of our lives. Mm-hmm. You worked at a place that I frequented. So we probably did, but just didn't realize it. So talk about that a little bit, what you do now with the juveniles and kind of like even with them, and you mentioned it a little bit, you kind of hinted at it, some of the limits that they have busted through that, society says, oh, mm-hmm. you've committed an offense, so you're a throwaway now.
Yep. Well, and I think it's across the board. I think one of the benefits of me having ADHD is with other kids and the trauma stuff too. I'm not a very judgmental person. So that's good. But then with my ADHD, I think that creative thinking. So when a juvenile is in my office and they say, well, I can't do this. I can't pass math. I can't do whatever. I think it's beneficial that I can think outside the box because I can say, okay, what about this? Or what about that? Or have you thought and come up with creative ways because the normal solutions like, well, could you get a tutor? They're like, no. Could you get, what about an extra study hall? No. Could you stay after school? No. And that's one of the reasons I think I loved working with juveniles. I miss them being the boss. I get to harass them in the hallways when they go to see them sometimes. But
I don't know. I mean, I think the whole reason I like juveniles and the whole reason I was somewhat successful at it and the juveniles I supervised were successful was I never put limits on any of them. Like, no matter what, whether it was criminal behavior, whether it was substance abuse, mental health. And especially since a lot of the kids have some trauma in their background, sometimes horrendous trauma. And so, you know, to say to them, gosh darn it, you're strong. I mean, the fact that you get up every day and get yourself dressed and get out the door is a miracle. And so don't tell me you have a limit where you can't pass algebra. Like, no, you can do whatever you put your mind to. You just need the right skills and the right tools to do it. And so I think that's what I always try to pass down to those juveniles that I supervised was, you can do anything within your power as long as you develop the skills, you practice, you know what you need to do, and you go from there. Sometimes simple stuff. Sometimes it's just a matter of no one's ever told them that.
Yeah.
You and I have talked a lot when I supervised the juveniles about IEPs and misdiagnosis and kids not getting the services they're supposed to get through their IEPs. And that's why if there's love at first sight, it was with you. Cause I was like, what? You're a master IEP coach. You must be in my world instantly. Because anyway, I don't know. So that's what I always try to do with the juveniles. I'm telling you, limits, they have busted through so many limits. They make me so happy. And I wish there was 3,000 of me so that I could be everywhere and see every kid graduate. But kids graduating from high school that you never thought graduate from high school, kids getting GEDs after they've been in prison. We have a young man on now who, my gosh, I'm not a hugger, but I think I just about could hug him every day. He has been to prison 3 times and he has had such trauma in his life and he's here and he's never gotten to work with us before. His prison terms weren't in our county. And so he's here and he's working with me and he's working with Dennis and he's just excelling because thinking outside the box. And Dennis is like me. Dennis is a creative thinker. He says, hey, no, we can do this. It's just a matter of working it how we need to work it, along with some really good service providers and things like that. But man, it's just crazy. I have a kid that I had him many, many years ago, and he is now retired from the Marine Corps and got 2 Purple Hearts. He did 7 tours in Afghanistan and Iraq and has 7 medals total for valor and things. So, I mean, you just couldn't. And I have kids that just is so simple. I have kids that are good parents. I have kids that have kids that are good parents. And it's that to me is just like, they're not repeating the cycle. I have kids that have full-time jobs. And I tell them all the time, success is what you deem it. Success isn't what I deem it. You know, if success for you is, you know, you didn't get arrested for 5 years, hot dogs. These kiddos bust through limits every day. Every day. I think, too, that they've busted through limits in the community as well, because I think once they're labeled a delinquent, people don't expect much from them. Now our county's a little bit better because, I don't know how to say it, but we don't have a bunch of gang fighting going on and gun violence. We have some, but you know, so it's a little bit better, but still the term delinquent, man. You know, yep. I've had, well, we were talking about this today, for example. One of the things we tell kids when they get on probation is you have to find a better pro-social group. Like, you have to find peers that are pro-social, that do pro-social things. So they try to find a pro-social peer, and at no fault of the parents, you know, if I was the parent of that pro-social kid, and I'd be like, wait, Johnny wants to come hang out at my house and he's on for burglary. Maybe not. Sure. So that limit is a really, really difficult one to cross. And you can't, and it's not the fault of either side, but it's how do you cross? And so that's one that we've struggled with. We still struggle with our adults on drug court. They have long, long, long histories of addiction, which means long histories of lying, not paying bills, you know, letting people down. And now they're doing well. And we're discussing, how do you get people to rent to them? How do you get people to give them jobs and trust that they're making changes in their life? So those limits are difficult. We're still struggling with those.
Yeah. But there are, as you said, there are a lot that they have busted through. You know, the kids that have done the graduation ceremonies and have completed the GED programs and, you know, are not repeating the cycle. When you talked to me the very first time and told me what you were doing with the juveniles and you wanted to know if I would be interested in helping, I jumped at the chance because that's kind of the underdog in society. And that has always been where my heart is. And so to be able to come in and say, you know, just because no matter what the label is, you know, if it's, and a lot of the kids, unfortunately, end up having a label that they've never had before, because of never being looked at seriously or having the right people in their corner to stand up for them to say, no, there is something here. We need to do something about this. And it's challenging, but I love the challenge. And I love being able to see these kids. I haven't been in it long enough to see the progress that you've seen, but I have seen already changes in kids when they find out that they have me now in their corner, along with all of the redeploy program people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the whole redeploy program is an amazing program. Can you talk about that for a little bit?
Sure. It's redeploy is kind of an interesting thing. It's a federal grant program to keep youth from being incarcerated in prison. The nice thing about redeploy funding, and it's called Redeploy Illinois in the statute, but the nice thing about it is that the developers, Department of Human Services, thought ahead and said, you know what? What looks like kids that are committed in Clinton County doesn't look the same as kids that are committed in St. Clair County or Madison County or Cook County or Peoria County. So rather than say, okay, you have to write for a grant and here's what you can write for inside the box, they said, think outside the box. You tell us what you need to do to prevent kids from going to prison, to Department of Juvenile Justice. And so in our circuit, and it's a circuit-wide program, I would say probably 90% of the kids, maybe even more, that we sent to prison were because they had mental health needs that weren't being met. So that doesn't mean they didn't have other issues, but they had mental health issues that were leading to behavior problems, were leading to substance abuse, were leading to neglect and abuse in the home, all kinds of things. And we didn't have services for them, so they ended up in prison. And nobody liked that. Judges, nobody. But there was no other option. So we wrote for redeploy grant the first time. We got it in 2009. And basically said, if you would give us money so that we could provide mental health services. And when we started with simply psychological evaluations, psychiatric evaluations, and counseling. That was what we started with. And since then, we've expanded greatly. But we were able to reduce our commitments the first year by like 60% because just getting those psychologicals and knowing what was happening with this kid. Is it a trauma thing? Is it a mental health thing? Is it a behavioral thing? You know, is it an intellectual disability? And then being able to get those services fit with that kid. I mean, that alone. Now we're to the point where we've had it so long and we've expanded and we've learned this works, this doesn't, that we have all kinds of things. So we have you, for instance, as a master IEP coach to come in and look at these kids' IEPs. And like I said, we have so many that we look at the IEP and we don't know. And I'm like, okay, looks good to me. And you come in and go, no, this, what, how is this goal dressing this? And it's like, and so now I just stand behind you and go, yeah, what she said. So we've been able to add that. We've added a life coach. We've added in-home intensive services, which are, it's a combination of parenting class for the parents, in TFCBT, which is trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy for the youth, and wraparound for the family. And they go to the home, and they are in the home a lot. And then they kind of wean down. And that's been hugely successful. We have developed an incentive program for that to reward kids for just for showing up, going to school, coming here, going to counseling, because sometimes that alone solves the problem if we can just get them where they need to be. We have money for flex funds like gas cards, food. We've had a family that didn't have any food in the refrigerator. And as I'm sure you've seen a million times, kids cannot focus in school or counseling or wherever if they're hungry and they don't know when they're going to eat. So that we've done clothes. We bought a young man clothes for like a job interview. And then he got the job and we bought him a uniform, like he had a black pants and stuff. My goodness, we have so much stuff now. We still have psychological, still have psychiatric. We still have we have mental health services and substance abuse services. And that's no cost. None of these services are a cost to the parent or the youth. The grant covers all the cost. So that's fantastic. The reason I think it's been so successful is A, cost. We didn't have money prior. And B, we've developed the services to fit our needs. So we've developed services to come to the family or come to the here, or depending on what the service is, we make it fit our needs. And we have, let me think now, we have lowered our DJ. As a matter of fact, this is circuit wide. So 9 counties. So in our 9 counties, in the last 2 years, we have not sent one single kid to the Department of Juvenile Justice. Not one.
That's amazing. How many were you sending before?
We were sending, the first year we did it, I think we had sent like 90.
Wow.
Yeah. So we, and the years that like prior to that, that we have sent kids, it's been 1 kid, 2 kids, 3 kids. I don't know that we've sent over 5 kids circuit wide, in over a decade.
That's incredible. And do you get to then keep track of them even after they would have graduated out of the juvenile system anyway?
We do our best, and it's a small community, so most of the time we can, but sometimes not. But we do our best, and we try to tell them to come back. And usually I run into them at Walmart. That's our follow-up tracking system. And they're more like, hey, what's up? I'm like, hey, how you doing? And so, I don't know. Yeah, we've seen just amazing success with it. And I think it's wonderful that DHS gives us the ability to adapt the program. Every year we have to rewrite and reapply for the grant. Every year we have to reevaluate. There's 4 of us that get together and break down the grant and go, what worked, what didn't work? What do we need more of? What do we need less of? I mean, even things like buying notebooks for the kids. One of the other things that we purchased was every kid that comes on probation in our circuit that's a redeploy kid gets a little hygiene pack. And it's got like soap and shampoo and toothpaste and a toothbrush and makeup wipes and all kinds of stuff in it. And oh my gosh, they just go crazy. You think they gave them $1 million.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's what I like about redeploy is we do everything from help with their needs, like food and things, all the way up to really intense counseling, whatever that kid needs.
And I hope that someday, because I'm a data person, you know, so I like to see the numbers that go along with everything. But I'm just thinking, you know, the fact that you've gone from 90 referrals before 2009 to, for a decade, you haven't had more than five. And in the last 2 years, you haven't had any. The amount of taxpayer dollars, the amount of increase in productivity from these individuals that if they didn't have these services could very well be non-productive and costing taxpayers more because maybe they would have ended up in the prison system. Mm-hmm. And it, and that's why I just absolutely wanted to jump on and be part of this, because I'm a future looker, and I know that they're actually, that sounded like probably something wrong, but that I know that there is a correlation between schools, third graders already, and our prison systems. Mm-hmm. And so if we can help them get what they need when they're already in our care, 10 hours, 8 hours, 6 hours, whatever it is, a day, 180 days a year. And then also when they fall into a situation that brought them to you, and I say fall into it, I realize that, you know, they didn't accidentally do whatever it was that got them to you.
I like to try and convince you of that sometimes.
Yeah. But I mean, honestly, nobody wants to be where they are if they're in that situation.
No.
Something in their life has given them the feeling that they needed to do whatever it was that mm-hmm. they did.
And we, you know, we have heard repeatedly parents say, you know, it's sad to say, but I'm happy my kid got on probation because I've been trying to get help for years. And I've said that all along, that it is really, really sad that we have to wait until a child commits a crime to intervene, to get somebody in there. And honestly, one of the reasons it works too is because it's the court system and we have a judge. And so when we have a school that says, no, you can't attend because you're expelled, the judge can say, no, you're court ordered to let them attend. Or, you know, if we have services that the family couldn't get, and sometimes it's ordering the parents, you have to take this kid to counseling, or sometimes it's a matter of bringing the services here. So I get it in a sense that we have a little bit more oomph behind what we can do, but it's really sad. I get calls on the weekends and at night a lot from police officers who say, we have this juvenile in our office and he really didn't commit a crime, but his parents don't know what to do. And do you have any resources? Do you know whatever? And I do my best. And then sadly, we also have times where police officers will call us and say, this kid stole, you know, I don't know, a six pack of beer from Walmart. And normally we wouldn't do anything about it, but he really needs help. And so we're going to ask the state's attorney to file and get him on supervision just so we can get him services. So, you know, the police don't want to arrest him. The judge doesn't want to sentence him, but sometimes that's the only way to get some of these services available to them.
Right.
And, you know, you were talking about the financial cost. I think it's too incredible to count. I wish I could, but you know, you can figure out what it costs to send a kid to DJJ. And I think the average cost for prison as an adult is like $50,000 a year. It's more for a juvenile because they have to have schooling. They have to have a psychiatrist, a nurse, all those things on premises. Also with the juveniles, you can only have one correctional guard to like six kids versus adults. No one cares, really, which is sad. But, and then you think of that cost that we're saving, but also the kids that are successful in this program and the kids that successfully complete probation, we don't see their kids in the system in DCFS. We don't see them in the system as adults. So we don't see their kids in the juvenile system a lot. So I don't know how you would calculate the cost comparison of providing these services up front. And I think the world is finally catching on to that. I've been doing this 30 some years, and for 30 some years, I've been beating my head on the wall going, why do people not figure out if we helped them when they were young, we wouldn't need adult prisons. We wouldn't need DCFS. We would need a lot of those things, or we would need them at a very minimal level because we helped the kids when they were younger. I think that's finally catching on. I think finally in Illinois and finally in the United States as a whole, people are catching on that if you give kids services, they become productive, pro-social adults with full-time jobs and families and whatever. Because these kids are not, I mean, sure, they're criminals in a sense, they committed a crime. And you always have that handful of kids that have way too many problems, or you have that one or two kids that really are scary and violent and need to be in prison, but they're few and far between. And so it's just a matter of they're good kids that just did something dumb for whatever reason, and they need somebody to get them back on track.
Yeah. And I know there is a way, and I don't know what the formula is, but I've seen other type of systems that are for adults, and they do have a way. There is some calculation, some formula that they can say, you know, if this cycle had continued, if this person had done this, you know, and then they come up with the extravagant number and you're like, wow, why weren't we doing this before? You know, this is amazing. And it's incredible to me exactly what you said. Like, why is it taking it so long to catch on? One of the things that I have started saying in the last, I don't know, 10 years or so is that the wheels of education move slower than a snail in molasses, because it just, like, here's an institution that talks about you have to follow the science. You have to, you know, have research-based education curriculums. You have to do this. And then we don't apply it in our own system. Mm-hmm. And it's always boggled me, like, okay. And then we're always changing. We change things, but we don't change them. You know, and a lot of the things that we do now was something that maybe was happening for you and I when we were in school, but now we call it something different because we can't call it that anymore.
Right.
But it's basically the same thing. And yeah, it's this whole like cycle of, I don't know, it's a weird thing. And it just doesn't seem like obvious things are really being addressed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, I have to toot our own horn a little bit because there are, I think, 13 redeploy sites across the state, and not all of them are as successful as ours. We have really good people in charge. I know you've met Meredith and Benet and Laura and all them. And then we have some really, really good juvenile officers who are really invested, great judges, especially Clinton County. I mean, don't tell my public defender this, but he does a great job. The state's attorney's office does a great job. The juvenile judge, you know, everybody in our courtroom is really trying to make that kiddo successful. That's rare. That's a rare thing. So our program, our Fourth Circuit redeploy program, just was awarded Program of the Year by Illinois Probation Court Services Association. So
awesome. Congratulations.
Go us. We got a plaque and everything.
Yeah.
So we're actually celebrating. We're taking all the juvenile officers out for lunch to celebrate, because they really do. They do a bang up job. They meet once a month. They are very creative. They work together really well, share ideas. They're just amazing. It just fascinates me. But anyway, so I think our county and our circuit have busted through limits because we have just said, no, we're not going to lie down and take it. We're just going to figure it out. And whatever that means, that means, you know, I make 14 phone calls till I find somebody who does it for free. Then that's what I do. You know, heck, I was doing this on how many years until I was in that CMWCC thing and you started talking and I was like, oh, my new best friend. I found my new best friend. Oh my gosh. And I mean, I think it was like the meeting wasn't even over and I was like emailing you. What is a master IEP code? How do I get one?
Yeah, that was almost verbatim, I think, what you said, too.
So that's where my being a bully helps, because I just, like, go out there and go, this is what we need. Somebody figure out how to get it, and we will get it.
And it's, again, it's a pro of being having someone with ADHD. I can't speak anymore. It's too late in the day, but this is being recorded. So even though I said good afternoon, it's not really afternoon for us. But it's that thinking outside the box. It's that creativity that you had because you went, oh, I have a bunch of kids that either do have or might need to have an IEP. And if this person's a master at it, then this is, you know, she could probably help us out in some way. And so then I started with just our county. And now I am our whole district. And hopefully it expands throughout the whole state. Not that I necessarily will be the one to cover the whole state, but I can certainly find other people that do what I do and bring them on. But this is something that is so valuable. I hope that there are other systems like this in the other states. Do you know if there are?
I do not know. And funny redeploy, there were a lot more sites than there are now this is just my own personal opinion. I think it's because it's data driven. You have to prove that what you're doing works. So we collect a lot of data. And you gotta be willing to do that. I mean, the juvenile officers have to collect it. Then they have to send it to Benet and Meredith. Then they have to collect it. And then the CMOs have to collect stuff. And because it's a grant, there's money stuff. I mean, so it's a lot of office administrative work. Luckily, we find it worth it because we get so many benefits out of it that everybody in our circuit is willing to do their part. I know there have been other counties and circuits who've had redeploy and who've not reapplied because it's just too much work or they didn't find it successful. Okay. And I think part of it is the ADHD, like you said. I think it comes from, like me, when I started in 99 here as the juvenile officer, and they didn't even have juvenile officers prior to that. I got hired through a barge grant where they said, you know what, we need a juvenile officer at least in each county. And so the state funded a juvenile officer in each county. So prior to that, they had adult officers supervising juveniles, and they supervised them just like adults.
Right.
So when I came in, there was nothing. And I just would say, oh, you know what I think we need? I'm going to get on the phone and find it. And I just would call around and annoy people until I got what I wanted. And you know, it's like one person would introduce you to somebody else, And finally I'd find somebody and be like, yes. Okay. Now I got that person clinched. Now I need this service. And so a lot of it was just networking, talking to people, being creative, saying, you know what, I don't have any money. So how can I make this happen myself? At one point, this is so funny, we only had enough money to buy books. So we bought a life skills book. We bought a study skills book. And I can't remember what the other one was. And I worked late every night. So Monday night, I had kids that would come here and we'd do study skills. Tuesday night, we had kids that would come here and we'd do life skills. Wednesday night, I had parents to come here. We'd do parenting class. And I would just get out the book and we'd go, all right, today, who wants to learn about whatever? And at one point, we had kids come in here with their backpacks and they would just come here after school and I would help them organize their backpacks and send them on their way. And
oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah. And so now when I think about how far we've come, it just fascinates me. And I think it's because, with the ADHD, I was always like, hey, how about we just try this? What the heck? If it doesn't work, we try something else. And then because I did like juveniles and I am a little bit on the hyperactivity side, I was fine with like, yeah, come on in with your book bag. We'll make it happen, you know?
Yeah.
So, and then we found Redeploy and they decided to fund our craziness. So, hey. Even better.
But you know, it's again, that is, I think, another pro of ADHD is that being creative, is that thinking out of the box. When you look at a lot of the inventors and inventions and advances in technology, those people, a lot of them didn't do great in school, either grades wise or behavioral wise. And because of that, they became creative thinkers. Mm-hmm. And they were not okay with failing, but they weren't as deterred by, like, they didn't look at it as failing. It's like, well, that didn't work. It wasn't a failure. We found something that didn't work. Let's try something and see if that works.
We checked that one off. You know, I kind of compare it to when you're like eliminating problems. So like you know, if you're connecting a computer up and your printer doesn't work and you go, okay, plug this in. Well, nope, it's not power. Oh, plug this in. Oh, no, it's not the connection. Oh, no. And so it's a process of elimination. And I think ADHD people, I think we think like that. I think it's just, let's try this. And I think, too, like part of it is with our attention span is so short that failures come and go. It's like, oh, I failed. Oh, well, what time is it? Time to eat? All right, let's go. You don't dwell. You know, ADHD people, we just don't dwell on stuff. We're just like, okay, that worked or that didn't work. Or, and sometimes we're shocked when something works.
I really didn't think that would work.
I've been known to be amazed and go, oh, that worked. Well, look at me go. But I think that's it. I mean, and I try to tell the juveniles that, and even the adults, that, you know, everything happens for a reason, and everything, you know, I'm ADHD for a reason. And so I have those skills. Now I also have to realize that there are things that I have to have assistance with. And I have to say, okay, yep, I'm distracted. As a matter of fact, it's great because my secretary is so used to me now. She's just like, no, you need to go shut the door. Like, you're way too high strung right now. Like, just go and shut the door and decompress for 5 minutes. I'm like, but I don't want to. And she's like, go. Fine, Gino, go. So I mean, you have to have people around you, and you have to know what you're good at and what you're not, just like everybody else. Just like every other human being, you have to know, these are my strengths, these are where I struggle, and you have to play to your strengths. And so whatever that is, and mine happens to be hyperactivity and impulsivity. But
you've made them your superpowers.
I've made them my superpowers, and I get stuff done. They laugh at me because we have, like, we'll get emails like, hey, I need this by Friday. And then I'm like, do, send it back. Because A, I know if I don't do it right now, it won't happen. And B, it's just that impulsiveness. It's that, oh, I got to do it. All right, do it. Done. Boom. You know? And so they always laugh at me about it. And they're like, we know yours is going to be the first one in. And so they try to beat me and things like that, but it doesn't work. Because I know that's the way I have to do things. Like, I know I can't procrastinate. I know I need to do, I have to-do list upon to-do list. And I now have found a program on my phone where I actually can cross it out of my to-do list. So I'm so excited. So I write it on paper and I put it in my phone, and the crossing out, I don't know about other ADHD people, but for me, the taking the pen and crossing that line out, it's like, yes.
Oh, I like that. I'm a checklist person. Yeah. I like my lists of things to do. And then, I'm so bad with lists that sometimes if I do something that I hadn't already written on the list, I'll write it on the list just so I can cross it off.
Been there, done that. Because it's like, you want to get credit for it.
Yeah.
It's like, somebody needs, and nobody sees my to-do list but me, but it's like, so I need, that needs to be happening right now. I need to write down that I did that.
Yep, exactly.
My husband has autism, and he is a list person. And one time he called me, and he was so proud of himself that he had made a list and he had gotten 4 things done on the list. And I was so excited. And I come home, and the very first thing on his list is make a list.
Make a list.
And to this day, that's my favorite thing. I always put at the top of my to-do list, make a list.
Yes, because then you can cross it off immediately.
Yeah. As soon as you put the second item on there, it's a list. So we're a strange couple. If you want to hang out with us, you know, autism and ADHD, we're all over the place, but
hey,
we have a lot of superpowers.
Exactly. That makes for good entertainment. You're fun. You're peppy. You like Mexican food. I saw you at the Mexican restaurant recently, and you were having fun without margaritas. So, I mean, that's
the other thing about ADHD. I don't need alcohol or drugs, man. I can entertain myself or 50 other people. The bad side of it is I forget often that I'm not alone in the world. And I often forget that there are security cameras in the courthouse. So I have been known to get a phone call that I've been dancing down the hallway on my way to the bathroom, or singing loudly because I forget I'm not by myself, or playing the drums. I'm sure that corrections has a good laugh sometimes at night watching the security tapes and going, what is she doing? Why is she doing the hustle down the hallway? Like, I don't know.
That's all right.
But
you only live once, and, you know, you do you and all those other fun things. Carla, I hate to cut this off because I'm so much enjoying this, but we've actually gone over the hour.
Oh, my goodness.
I told you I would cut us off at an hour, but we were in the middle of something really good, and I didn't want to stop it. So this episode is going to be a little longer than an hour.
Hashtag no limit.
Hashtag exactly. No limits of an hour. Thank you so very much. It's been my great joy. Thank you for pushing your way onto the show and telling me that you were. And by the way, when she was talking about Dennis earlier, he and his wife were on the show a few months back. I don't remember their episode number. But that's why she was like, well, you had Dennis. And
I know. I'm so jealous.
I should be on there. And so I'm so glad you did.
And then we were hanging out at the conference and you were like, Hassan, would you like to be on my show? Sharon, would you like to be on my? And I'm like, what am I? Dog food? Like, I'm right here. Right. So,
yep. And so, and here you are, you're on before either one of them.
Yes.
See, it's your, that impulse. It got you again. Cause I only asked you like today if you wanted to be on tomorrow. And you were like, sure. So, yeah, impulse. It worked out beautifully. I asked her.
My to do list.
Yeah.
My bucket list.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so very much. And thank you everyone who's watching this as the replay, because we did have to record this because she's so incredibly busy and it was very last minute, but it worked out beautifully.
It did.
And, so enjoy it. And my brother don't watch it and her public defender don't watch it. And if you know either of those people, don't tell them because we don't want them to watch it. Everybody else watch it.
To think I like him. Man, that's a bad precedent to set.
I don't like it when my brother knows that I compliment him. It makes the family gather. You know, we got Christmas coming up. It's just going to be a pain now.
They will remember.
I know they will. Well, thank you very much. Merry Christmas to you. And we will talk again soon. See you all next week.
See ya.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, SHELLEYKENOW.